From the bottom of my heart, this is Here Be Monsters.
Hi, Jeff. How are you? You want to see me? Okay.
I want to see you in there.
Okay, in just a minute. I'll be with you in just a second.
Howdy.
Hello.
So, what's new with you?
Oh, you know, I'm behind schedule on stuff and kind of winging it, you know, but that's very familiar territory for me, so.
Okay, well, yeah, I joined the club, so that's kind of what we are here. I just need to retrieve Dad from the basement. Okay, come on, Rick.
Yeah, you're on. You've been recorded.
Okay.
Did you know my old house in Seattle is still standing?
Yeah, I was under the 99% sure assumption that that was going to be made flat for the transit station the underground, whatever.
It's the only block that hasn't been developed in the entire neighborhood.
What happened?
You know, we got the notice from our landlord. It was almost 4 years ago.
Yeah,
and they just got boards on the windows and it's still there. You know. It makes me feel weird, and I don't quite know what to do with it, but...
Yeah.
Are either of your childhood homes still standing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes, mine is. I think the old barn is still there that we used to play in, and we had a cow named Mrs. Henry, and certainly a memory I have. I remember we used to be able to go down the road a little ways, and there was a road that went back into the woods. I don't even know where it went exactly, but it was kind of low right where it joined up with our gravel road, and so it would flood a little bit, and so we called it the pond, and we'd go down there and play, and we'd ride our bikes down there, and you know, probably stuff that most people wouldn't let their kids do anymore because they'd be out of sight of the house. So the last time we were in that house was 2018. And there were so many things that were still the same. It was very deja vu.
Hmm. What did it feel like?
It felt like I could just come right back there and step in and continue living. Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'm revealing too many of your secrets here when I say that you both are kind of easing into the oldest generation of our family. And
what do you mean, Jeff? explain to me what you mean by this.
I feel like anytime I say an age related thing, I get this kind of response.
He's a spring chicken.
Yeah. You're both spring chickens. But, you know, something that's often associated with that, I think, is kind of like becoming, you know, the librarian of memories or something like that, right? Like that's just kind of the oldest generation's task is like, we need to keep telling the stories. We need to like, make sure that these thoughts and ideas don't die out. And I'm wondering like, are you, either of you feeling like pressure on that front?
It is scary. You know, I think I've felt that with my mom and dad both having passed away. I know that there are tons of stories that probably they never told us, let alone the ones that they have told us that we've forgotten, which seems terrible, but I don't know what to do about it.
Dad, do you have any thoughts?
I don't feel pressure. I think sometimes you don't know when to ask a question about the past. You know, sometimes that doesn't happen until after the fact. Sometimes things stay in a box and you don't find them until somebody passes away. And you say, like what Mom just did, you say, oh, shoot, missed the chance. Should have probably asked.
Yeah. Hey, I've got one more question, and this is going to seem kind of unrelated, but just bear with me here. Do you have any books in the house?
Andy, what's balloons? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yes. Yellow ones. Yeah.
Could you two or three of them for me?
Yes. Why are we doing this?
I'll explain it to you later.
Okay.
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 Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
the half-mermaid, half-salmon population of the Northwest.
The podcast about the unknown.
The sponsor for this episode is Walk in the Woods, a miniature illustrated zine about the things you can find when you walk in the woods.
Okay, what is this? They're like little, really cute, fuzzy flowers.
The issues come out once or twice a month, and you can get them mailed to you for free. And if you'd like to support the project with a donation, you can do that too.
I think this is a mushroom, but it looks like, it honestly looks like part of a snail shell.
Subscribe at walkinthewoodszine.com. There's also a link in the show notes.
Oh, wait, no, it is a snail shell.
Thank you, Walk in the Woods, for supporting Here Be Monsters. You know, for the last couple years or so, my dad's been mailing me thumb drives with family videos on them. And I added them all up finally. And it looks like there's about 50 hours of family videos, some that he took, some that his dad took, some that some other people took. And I just have them, you know. I'm really glad I do, because as far back as I can remember, I've always been really afraid of forgetting things. And now, you know, years later, I do know that I have forgotten and I do forget things all the time. And I just hope it's nothing important. You know, a large part of how I remember things, though, is I remember places, right? I have a hard time remembering people and faces, but the actual places I've been and the weather and the way things sound is an incredibly important element of my own memory. But you don't always get that from pictures or videos. It can be kind of hard to understand what a place really felt like to be in. So I've been kind of interested in preserving sound, right? As if I could take like a panorama of every place that's important to me and just keep that forever so that I can revisit it and make new memories there maybe in the future, even if that place disappears from the world entirely. You know, years ago, back when I was first learning audio, I came across this audio technique that just seemed like absolute magic to me. It just seemed like something that shouldn't work, but somehow it does. And it's this way that you can take a place and you can preserve it in sound. And all you have to do is just capture this one very short little piece of audio. And it's like you've stolen that space, like you have it, a digital version of it, just kind of trapped for your use later. And I think I can actually briefly explain to you how it works. It's what I'm going to be doing in this episode. And you kind of have to ask yourself this question of like, okay, so if you're going to preserve a place, how are you going to do it, right? There's kind of a couple components that make any place sound unique. And one of those things is the sound of the ambience, right? So, you know, you might have a place that has some birds chirping in the background, or maybe like the low hum of traffic. Airplanes going by overhead. I don't know, car horns honking. Right? So that's like part of it. That's the ambience part of it. But there's more to making something sound like it's existing in a real place. And so the way sound works, sound is bouncy. Sound wants to hit something and bounce off of it. And the exact ways in which sound does that is what makes a space sound really unique. It's the way that the reverberations kind of emanate throughout a room. It's why your bedroom sounds different than your bathroom when you're talking. And it's why your bathroom sounds different than your kitchen when you're talking. And it's why your kitchen sounds different than a long tunnel sounds when you're talking. And that's why when you're in a tunnel, you should always go in there and hum until you find that resonant frequency where all the frequencies build up and makes it feel like you're kind of swimming in noise. In any case, there's these two elements to what makes a space sound like a space, and that is that ambience, right? And that stuff you can just add in as you please. You hear me doing it all the time on this show. But then there's that more subtle thing, that way of getting the reverberations to sound just right. You just need a special kind of sound file called an impulse response. The way you get an impulse response is you go to the place that you want to record, and then you just do something really loud, right? You do something like you clap. Some people clap. Some people will shoot a starter's pistol. Some people will play a really loud frequency sweep from low to high out of a loudspeaker. And some people do what I do, and when I record impulse responses, I pop a balloon. So you have the impulse, which is that loud sound, and then you have something called the response, which is just how the space responds to that loud sound, that impulse. So you have like kind of the sonic fingerprint of that space. Impulse responses don't sound very interesting to listen to. They just kind of sound, you know, like this. But once you have that, again, you kind of have this sonic fingerprint of the place, and you can use that to convolve other audio around it. It's kind of like taking, you know, my voice and then wrapping it in this space. Here I am at the center of a school classroom. And here I am in the middle of a nuclear cooling tower. And here I am at a freeway underpass. But these aren't places I've ever actually been. These are all impulse responses borrowed from other people. They're someone else's memories. So I've been recording my own lately. I've been riding around Seattle, popping balloons at places that I would like to keep the memory of. I've just been trying to capture these places as long as they're still places, because Seattle's a changing city. It's changing fast, and I'm just trying to do my best here. Of course, something's always lost in the recording. There's no such thing as a perfect recording. There's always some kind of noise, and it's impossible to avoid. So some of the recordings turn out better than others, but I would like to think that even the flawed recordings have some kind of merit. At the end of the day, it's just a sonic trick, and a subtle one at that. But if it can trick me into remembering something I might have otherwise forgotten, then I think it's worth it. There's a building on the edge of the University of Washington campus called Padelford Hall. And beneath Padelford Hall, built into this really steep hillside, there's this brutalist, angular parking garage that's just exposed, unfinished concrete everywhere. I don't think many people like the place, but it seems familiar to me. The first time I ever came here was in 2012, when my brother was getting married. I was the best man, and I helped out earlier in the day by tying balloons to tree branches and to railings and to things around the garage just to mark the way so that people didn't get lost. And then there was the ceremony and then the reception. And it was a good day. That was about a year before I moved to Seattle for the first time. And when I got here, I took a job at Jimmy John's delivering sandwiches on my bike. And our delivery range was the University of Washington campus and the surrounding neighborhoods. You know, it's really physically demanding work. I remember once a coworker of mine mentioned that he didn't ever mind going down to the bottom of the hill because he would just take the escalator back up. And I asked him what he meant. And he said, you know, the escalator in Padelford Hall. And one time he showed me where it was, and it was in the parking garage, just hidden away in the back corner, there's the world's tiniest escalator. It's like a foot wide. And he would just stand on that instead of biking back up the hill. And I tried it once or twice, but somehow the convenience of riding the escalator never outweighed the embarrassment I felt when some business suit wearing professor would catch me taking the easy way instead of biking up the hill like I was supposed to. The escalator's still running, but now it's really squeaky. Ages ago, my brother emailed me a link to an article about a researcher at the University of Washington. She was studying crows and facial recognition. And so I interviewed her for the podcast, and she told me something that I actually really didn't realize, which is that most of Seattle's crows commute in from the suburbs. And so there's this forest out in Bothell where just tens of thousands of crows sleep each night for most of the year. And if you catch it at the exact right time, right around sundown, you'll just see waves and waves and waves of them flying in on their commute home from the city. And so I really wanted to go there. I really wanted to see that and record it. So I asked two of my coworkers from Jimmy John's if they would come with me. And early in the evening, we started biking out there. I think it was the farthest I'd ever ridden back then. It was a really long trip for me, so it felt significant. And right as we got into Bothell, right before we reached the forest where the crows lived, we rode through this really long tunnel with purple and orange murals on the walls. And all these years later, it's still painted the same. It's a couple degrees cooler in there. There's bright fluorescent lights. And the faster you ride, the better those murals look. The longest I've ever lived anywhere as an adult was in this purple house on a busy street in northeast Seattle. It's an old house. It was built in 1915. I produced seasons 2, 3, 4, and 5 of this show in the basement of that house. I had a really small desk back then that I had next to the furnace and the hot water tank, and off to my left I had a tiny little window that looked out over the empty lots and the condemned houses that were all around us. Yeah, I lived there for about 4 years, and me and all my roommates, we moved out when the house became slated for destruction. For the last year or so, there was a massive crane that loomed over everything in the neighborhood. I remember one night, I finished up my work and went out for a walk, and I went up to the high school track, and I lined up the tip of the crane with the full moon and just balanced it there for a while. I knew things were changing, but I wasn't sure how. I moved to the East Coast, spent 3 years there, and came back this summer. And the house is still standing, just like it always was. I really didn't think it would be. I really wanted to go back inside, but obviously the door's locked. The windows are boarded up. The construction company put up a big fence that I was too scared to climb. I really wanted to get a clean impulse response on the porch, but there were just too many cars driving by. But I can still remember the feeling of sitting out there on a hot summer day with my dinner, talking to my roommates as they came and went. It was a place where some friendships started and some relationships ended, and some mail was gotten, some flowers were planted, some t-shirts were bleached, some fences were blown over in the wind. I think it's going to be hard to shake the true memory of that house, but I can feel things fading already.
Like this new and indescribable pinwheel effect, even the half-mermaid, half-salmon population of the Northwest had to admit that the Aquafolly's champions could go the fish one better.
There's a lake kind of in the center of North Seattle called Green Lake. It's a beautiful lake. It's full of ducks and geese. And these little things that aren't quite ducks, but kind of look like ducks. And decades ago, the city built a big theater there. And they would have water dancers, and they would have hydroplane races and concerts even. Like Led Zeppelin played there, and the Grateful Dead played there. And then they tore down some of the buildings that surrounded the theater. But they left in that theater seating, these big concrete stairs that people can sit on. And they don't have shows there anymore, but people do use the concrete steps to exercise on. I used to go there and sit on those stairs and look at the lake and do my writing. But I live a lot farther from it now. It snowed last winter in Seattle. Quite a bit, too. Maybe 6 inches at my new house. Snow in Seattle isn't unheard of, but it's rare. It's kind of hard to think that I'll see that many more snowy nights in Seattle. You know, putting it mildly, this is an expensive city to live in, and it's still far from most of my family. I do like it here, though. And I especially like the sound of the city when there's fresh snow. The sound moves different. Everything's soft. Everything that's usually noisy becomes muted. It's just kind of like turning down the volume on the world. And I feel like everything just gets lit up and beautiful. And, you know, lets me hear my tinnitus a little bit.
Here they come.
Dad, now you're gonna carry Jeffrey.
I'm curious to know, like, is there anything that you think you missed? Any memory that you wanted?
I sort of wanted to be present in the moment as opposed to trying to capture a good video. So, yes, I would say I probably missed a whole lot. That I was probably present in the moment.
What about you, Dad? Can you think of any footage that you wish you had that you really don't?
You know, I obviously took a lot of pictures, but the one thing that I didn't get was, I didn't get a chance to capture was what I missed from being at work for all crazy hours. You know, the afternoons you guys came home from school, I never was, you know, wasn't there very often. Some of these things that Mom remembers that I don't think I was there. Some of those kind of common days, sort of just rather than a holiday, rather than a big event, I think those common, you know, day in, day out scenarios, I only have secondhand memories.
Yeah. I've got one more question, and this is going to seem kind of unrelated, but just bear with me here. Do you have any balloons in the house?
Balloons?
Yeah.
Yes, yellow ones. Yeah.
Could you blow up two or three of them for me?
Yes, why are we doing this?
I'll explain it to you later.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Are you guys in the kitchen?
We're in the dining room.
Oh, okay. Let's say, get a good 2 feet away from the phone, and I'll have you pop it. And just make sure that is, and just make sure you're not making any other noises when you pop it, okay?
Okay, so here we go.
Okay.
What are you going to do with that?
Well, okay, so here's the thing, right? Like, there's this really funny trick you can do with audio, where if you record the sound of a balloon popping, you can kind of fake that space again digitally, just because you have kind of captured it. And so I think, and I haven't tried it yet, but I'm pretty sure I'll be able to recreate the sound of being on the phone with you. I could, I think, put myself kind of on the other end of the phone at a later point. And I was thinking for, the sake of posterity, being able to put myself in the space of the house that you live in, albeit like through a telephone line, might be interesting. And I don't know if it's going to work or not. So,
okay.
So anyways, I'm going to start working on this, but, it's good talking to you.
Yeah, you too. Okay, honey.
Yeah. Love you
good
both.
To talk to you. Love you
okay.
too.
Yeah, good talking to you.
Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye. My name is Jeff Entman, and I produce this episode. Big thank yous to Rick and Kathy Entman, who are my parents. Also, Forrest Perrine helped me out with some of these recordings. Forrest is also an amazing painter. I'm going to put a link up to his work on the website, which is hbmpodcast.com. Over on the website, I've also put some links to some of the places you heard in this episode. Again, that's hbmpodcast.com. You can also find Here Be Monsters on social media at hbmpodcast. Music on this episode from August Fries, The Black Spot, Phantom Fauna, and Cirocell. Here Be Monsters is an independent podcast about fear, beauty, and the unknown. It's supported by individual sponsors and donors. You can become a donor by visiting patreon.com/hbmpodcast. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon. You know, I don't really normally record postscripts to episodes, but it's 5:30 p.m. on March 30th, 2021, and Forrest just texted me a picture of the old house, or where the old house used to be. He lived there with me. It looks like they tore it down today, so it's finally gone, just the foundation there now. It was a good house. It will be missed. Okay, that's all.